Welcome in, everyone, to another episode of the Double Dribble Podcast, your source for all things Alabama basketball. I'm your host, Jordan Harper, head basketball analyst at Tide Illustrated of the Rivals Network. You can find me on Twitter at HarperNation24, where you will find a lot of Alabama basketball information posted, as well as on the boards on Tide Illustrated on Rivals. So Alabama came away with a victory, technically last night, with this being recorded at 12:21 a.m. Kind of has to happen since it was an 8 o'clock tip-off, which I absolutely hate during the week. But nonetheless, Alabama came away with a 103-88 victory on the road against Ole Miss. So Ole Miss is one of the teams that are kind of on the brink of the bubble, or, you know, the cut line, if you want to say it like that, in terms of making the NCAA tournament. And Ole Miss really needed this game. So you knew it was going to be a dogfight. You knew it was going to be a very tough game being on the road, albeit the pavilion wasn't rocking like it typically would be. It was halfway full. The student section was full, but regular capacity. I was kind of disappointed considering a ranked team like Alabama coming in with Ole Miss' season really on the line here. And Ole Miss' crowd was kind of lackluster for a late-night tip-off. But nonetheless, Alabama earned a very gritty win and put up 100 points for the ninth time this season, tying at Kentucky for the all-time SEC record for 100-point games in a season. And you did not think it would happen this game when you were looking at it. And kind of late in the first half, Alabama was down 37-23 with 5 minutes to go in the first half. And, I mean, Alabama was basically on pace to score about 31 points in the first half, which is kind of crazy to think about for this offense. This is a historically great offense, one of the best offenses college basketball has ever seen. And Ole Miss, which is a pretty bad defense, they're ranked outside the top 100 in adjusted defense in KenPom. And Alabama just couldn't make a shot. At one point, they were 1-for-9 from three and shooting below 32% overall. And if it wasn't for Mark Sears, Alabama would have been dead in the water early on. He was kind of carrying the load early for Alabama. But with 5 minutes to go, it was 37-23 and ultimately ended up 42-39 at halftime. So you saw Alabama kind of make a run there, outscoring them 16-5. The last 5 minutes of the half. And you kind of felt the momentum, if you're following or watching the game, you kind of felt the momentum flip for Alabama's favor. They were starting to knock down three-point looks. They were getting to the basket. They were getting fouls and going to the free throw line, where we'll kind of look at the box score and everything like we always do here in a moment. But my thoughts on the game is Alabama showed a lot of resiliency. It felt a lot alike the Georgia game earlier in the year, where it was on the road. Georgia could not miss in the first half, which Ole Miss couldn't either. And Alabama just looked dead in the water. They were down, I believe, 13 at halftime. So it wasn't as bad tonight as it was then. But you just felt like the opposing team was really playing above their heads for the first half. And Alabama was just kind of hanging in there, not playing very well. And then they just turned on the burners in the second half, and Alabama outscored Ole Miss 64-46 in the second half, which is absolutely nuts to think about. And with the 64 points came a lot of threes, and Mark Sears was at the forefront of that. Davin Cosby, we'll kind of jump into here in a second, was absolutely amazing for Alabama, especially in the second half. I mean, they outscored Ole Miss 80-51 in the final 25 minutes of the game. They scored 80 points in 25 minutes. 80. If you think about that, that is going to be roughly, you know, on a 140-point pace for a full game, 40 minutes, if you stay on that pace. It's absolutely incredible what this Alabama offense can do. They're never out of any game. Obviously, they scored 95 points last game and lost by over 20 points to Kentucky just because Kentucky couldn't miss and Alabama couldn't stop them at all. And you saw Kentucky go on the road and put up, I can't remember how many points exactly they put up, but they, let me look here, they put up 91. Yeah, I thought it was about 90 points at Mississippi State, who is a top 30 defense in the country. So they're red hot offensively. Alabama just ran into them at the wrong time in Rupp Arena. And the offense really hasn't been an issue at all for Alabama here recently. They've scored 103, 95, 98 in overtime, 100, 109. I mean, that's an incredible offensive run the past five games. If you want to go to the past seven, 81, 99. Just incredible work by this Alabama offense. And while they can defend, they give up 88 points tonight and over 50% shooting overall to, I mean, a average, I would say. I mean, they're okay offense in Ole Miss, but they shouldn't be scoring 88 points on a top 15 team. But Alabama couldn't stop them nosebleed if they wanted to. But sometimes it really just doesn't matter. You can just outscore your opponent. And I think that's what Nate Oates has kind of just accepted, the fact that they're just going to have to outscore everybody. And if that's the case, they can do it. They've shown it. They can score 100 points any given night against anybody. So let's kind of dive into some of the statistics and kind of see where this game went in Alabama's favor. It was really close in terms of field goal percentage. It was 50 for Alabama, 52% for Ole Miss. The one discrepancy was Alabama shot 70 times compared to Ole Miss's 54. Why? Because Ole Miss turned it over 14 times compared to 8 for Alabama. And Alabama out-rebounded them on the offensive glass 14-7. Now, most of that was done in the second half. You know that Nate Oates said at halftime when he was going in to the locker room, he said they got to get back on the offensive boards. They've been dominated in the rebounding category, which they were. They were out-rebounded by, I think, 5 at halftime, and they ended up out-rebounding them by 5 at the end of the game. So they out-rebounded them by 10 in the second half, which is absolutely incredible. I mean, incredible turnaround. Alabama's always been a second-half team, seems like, this year. If they stay close or if they're ahead in the first half, you kind of figure that they're going to put it on in the second half. But Alabama made 15 of 37 threes, which if they're doing that, good luck. There's not many teams out there that can do that or can beat Alabama shooting that well. And that's one complaint I had with Alabama against Kentucky last game, is they just didn't shoot enough threes. They were 6 of 17 overall from three, and that's just not Alabama basketball under Nate Oates. I mean, you want to put up a healthy 28 to 30 threes or more per game. If you're not getting that, then you're not running good offense, and you're just relying too much on twos and free throws. If you can start getting some three-pointers, you can start making some runs and putting a lot of pressure on the other team. That's what Alabama did this second half. I believe they made 8 three-pointers in the second half. The threes are what kind of kept them in it in the first half, especially from Mark Sears. But shooting 15 to 37 compared to 8 of 22 from 3 for Ole Miss, that's a 21-point difference from the three-point line. And Alabama typically dominates that area, and that's kind of where they end up pulling away and winning games. Now from the free throw line, 18 of 22 for Alabama, 24 of 31 from Ole Miss. Ole Miss had a pretty distinct free throw advantage there for a little while in the second half. Ole Miss ended up scoring 12 straight points from the free throw line midway through the second half. And that's really what kept them in this game. Alabama built an 8 to 9 point lead. I mean, they flipped it quick after halftime in the first seven, eight minutes in the second half. They flipped it quick. But Ole Miss getting 12 straight points from the free throw line kind of slowed the game down, kept them in it point-wise, because they really didn't have much going offensively. But Alabama didn't end up needing a lot of free throws for this game. They made their living from the three-point line. They ended up shooting 20 of 33 from two, So they got a lot of easy looks. Nick Pringle did a great job in the paint. Aaron Estrada did a lot of good work on the boards and cleaning up there. And I thought Jaren Stevenson had a pretty good game as well. We'll kind of jump into the box score of the individual players here in a second. But 35 made field goals for Alabama, 25 assists. It's pretty distinct that you can kind of tell if Alabama had a typical Alabama game, if they're assisting on a lot or over 70% of their made field goals. And here Alabama did. 25 assists on 35 made field goals is absolutely incredible. Shows that the ball movement is there, the unselfishness is there, and that's Alabama basketball under Nate Oates. Alabama had 8 steals, which led to a few runouts to get some easy points and get out Ole Miss in some foul trouble. I mentioned 14-8 on turnovers. Alabama had 19 points off turnovers compared to 15 for Ole Miss. But Alabama dominated the paint as they have been recently. They dominated Kentucky in the paint last game, scoring 56 points in the paint. They outscored Ole Miss 40-28 overall in this game. So it was a big difference. Scoring in the paint. Kind of looking at the box score. Starting with Alabama. Mark Sears had a great game, a SEC. You know, you saw Dalton Kincaid score nearly 40 points against Auburn tonight. Mark Sears didn't do that, but he still showed why he's a first-team All-SEC. Should be an All-American at the end of the year, whether it be third-team, second-team, whatever. He scored 26 points, 5 rebounds, 4 assists, 3 more steals. He's been racking up the steals recently. Had 3 of 8 from 3, 8 of 14 overall. You had Rylan Griffin that got hot there for a little bit in the second half before he ended up fouling out. He got in foul trouble in the second half. That's 14 points. Aaron Estrada got his first triple-double as well as 4 steals. 18 points, 10 rebounds, 10 assists. Great game from Aaron Estrada. And Grant Nelson ended up fouling out as well, but he ended up with 10 points overall. Now, looking at the bench, Davin Cosby Jr., 15 points on 5 of 10 from 3. He didn't take a single shot inside the 3-point line. I wouldn't either if I was him. I mean, you're getting wide open shots from the defense collapsing on Aaron Estrada and Mark Sears. Why would you try to drive it in and, you know, risk getting your shot blocked? I mean, you're getting wide open threes every time you touch the ball. So he goes 5 of 10. He kind of got in the doghouse a little bit early in the first half. I was wondering if we would see him again. Defensively, he's just not very good. He's not very quick. He's not athletic. But I could say that him and Latrell Reitzel are arguably the best shooters on the team, pure shooters. I was told that by a coach early, you know, before the season, that Davin Cosby Jr. is arguably the best shooter on the team. He just doesn't have the physical gifts to be a good enough defender to stay on the court long, you know, enough. He scored 15 points in 13 minutes tonight. Just incredible shooting effort from him. Nick Pringle did a great job inside, had 10 points, 5 rebounds, and had a block as well. And he was 4 of 6 from the free throw line. So you'll take that from Nick Pringle all day. Now, looking at Ole Miss, the one outlier that I see is Alan Flanagan. 28 points in 32 minutes when he probably shouldn't even be playing. He went 12 of 15 from the free throw line. So, you know, nearly half his points came from the charity stripe. And I thought half the fouls that got called on him in the bat, you know, underneath the basket, shouldn't have been called or should have been a charge call for Rylan Griffin. Rylan Griffin couldn't buy a charge call last night if it saved his life. But Alan Flanagan had 28 points, 7 of 10 shooting, 12 of 15 from the free throw line. But he shouldn't even have been playing after throwing an elbow, punch, whatever you want to call it, last game against South Carolina. Absolutely a disgrace from the SEC not suspending him at least one game. If you're going to suspend Muhammad Wagee for what he did, which is basically the same thing, but you can actually make a case that Muhammad Wagee didn't intend on doing that against Florida. I mean, you kind of suspect he did. But Alan Flanagan, there's no debate. He did intend to elbow slash punch that guy in the face. The fact he wasn't suspended, I was very surprised. But of course he ends up playing off the bench, and of course he ends up scoring 28 points. He had a very efficient night. And you had Jamin Brakefield, who ended up with 21 points. He ended up being 2 of 4 from 3, which, you know, he's not a great three-point shooter, but shot really well last night, of course. And then I thought Alabama did a really good job on Matthew Morrell. Really never got him going. Both him and Jalen Murray really could not get going. They combined for 6 of 20 from the field and 3 of 13 from 3. And those are really their main scoring their main scoring threats. And you held them in check. You know, Brandon Murray did not have a great game offensively, had 6 points. So Alabama's defense actually wasn't bad, considering 24 of the 88 points came from the free throw line. And majority of those foul calls, I would argue, that weren't foul calls. I mean, I'm not going to get on a tangent about the refereeing. But I thought Alabama's defense the second half was actually pretty solid. First half, you know, they got off to that big lead. They were just going through Alabama like Swiss cheese and could not stop them at all. But second half, you know, they gave up more points than they did in the first half, but I thought it was a lot better defensive effort. And the defensive effort, especially in the first 7 to 8 minutes of the second half, really gave Alabama what they needed to end up taking, you know, a 6-7 point lead with 10 minutes left in the game. So credit them. They only gave up, you know, 12 points in the first 8 minutes. And with Alabama's offense, that's plenty enough for Alabama to get back in the game, take the lead, and ended up getting tied with, you know, roughly about 9.5 minutes left. But after that, Alabama just kind of took control and never looked back. So Alabama won 103-88 over Ole Miss. And looking at the updated KenPom rankings, nothing changed. Alabama stays at 7. Their offensive efficiency went up to 128.1, which is the highest it's been all year. And looking back, I think it was 2015, 2016. I'm trying to think of when that Wisconsin team. Let me see. Wisconsin had the highest adjusted offensive efficiency of all time in the KenPom era, at least. And I cannot remember what they were. I want to say it was about 129. That was the highest that I've ever seen. The best offense I've ever seen in my life was Villanova in 2018. And they were 127.8. If that gives you any idea of where Alabama is. Yeah, Wisconsin was 129 in 2015. So Alabama is right there at, you know, 128.1. They're probably not going to get to 129. There's not enough time to get up there unless they score 100 the rest of the way, which would be incredible. But just appreciate that this is one of the top 5 best offenses that you'll probably ever see to this point in college basketball history. Is the defense perfect? No. Is it average? Probably. But this offense is so fun to watch. And Alabama is one of those teams that you just tune into every single time that they play because you know they're going to put on a show on that front. And you know it's going to be a high-scoring game because they can't really stop nobody. So looking at Alabama's kind of net sheet per se and kind of seeing where their quadrant one, quadrant two records are. Alabama right now is 5-7 in the quadrant one realm. Mississippi State did jump up to in the top 30, so they moved into a quadrant one win. Ole Miss is 75 right now, so they moved into a quadrant one win. Now that might change. I mean, they're right there literally on the cut line of being quadrant one to quadrant two. So they could easily fall to 3-7 tomorrow or 3-7 Friday. But right now they're 5-7 in quadrant one. They're 6-1 in quadrant two, with the one loss being Ohio State on a neutral floor. And then quadrant three and quadrant four, they're 9-0 combined. So you put that together, they're 20-8 in overall. They are 12-3 in conference, number one in the SEC. You have a huge, probably an SEC championship matchup this Saturday in Coleman against Tennessee, number four Tennessee, who demolished Alabama last meeting at Tennessee, 91-71, where Alabama just turned the ball over and over. They had 22 turnovers to Tennessee's 7 at the time and gave up over 20 points off of those turnovers. Now, I expect Alabama to play a lot different at home. They shoot a lot better at home. They take care of the ball better at home. And they really did a good job against Ole Miss, although Ole Miss is nowhere near the level of defense that Tennessee is. They did take care of the ball. Anytime Alabama has less than 10 turnovers a game, Alabama's probably going to dominate that game. And they did the second half. I mean, I think they had 4 turnovers each half. So probably one of the cleaner offensive games that Alabama's had recently, and end up showing up in the box score, having 103 points overall. But what a win that Alabama ultimately had tonight. You want to win the road games. Didn't get it at Kentucky. You knew you had to at least split against Kentucky and Ole Miss, and they did just that. And it sets up the final three games against Tennessee, Florida, and Arkansas. Now, Tennessee's at home. It's at Florida and at home against Arkansas. So if they could somehow beat Tennessee, you can kind of go into Florida with house money, right? You can kind of go into Florida with house money. To where even if you lose against Florida and you beat Tennessee, at worst, you're coming out of that game tied for first, right? Because Tennessee still plays at South Carolina, who is a game behind, by themselves, a game behind Tennessee and Alabama. So one of those two are going to lose when they face off. So at the worst, you're going to be tied leaving Gainesville, going home, facing a reeling Arkansas team that just lost to Vanderbilt at home last night, or technically 2 nights ago. So if you can make it to where you beat Tennessee, you're pretty much guaranteed a share of the SEC championship, which would be absolutely incredible in a potential bridge year / reloading, rebuilding year, whatever you want to call it. They were not expected to be this good this year. So, huge game this Saturday. I don't need to mention it. You know it is. To set up the last two games of the year. If Alabama were to lose to Tennessee, well, Tennessee still has a pretty difficult schedule moving forward. They do have to play at South Carolina that following Wednesday. South Carolina already beat Tennessee in Knoxville this year. So, obviously, South Carolina can do it again at home. So you're basically hoping that if Alabama lost to Tennessee, that South Carolina would beat Tennessee again. There's a good chance that there could be a three-way tie for first in Alabama, Tennessee, and South Carolina if all that happened. Because say Alabama lost to Tennessee, Tennessee the game up, and if South Carolina beat Florida at home, let's assume that, and Alabama lost at Florida, but South Carolina beat Tennessee. I know that's a lot happening right there, but that would equal a three-way tie going into the final weekend, where if you're Alabama, you have to feel good going into the final weekend if you're tied. But, yeah, I mean, that's going to be a great matchup to where going down to the final weekend. And there's a potential that there could be a three-way tie. So, I mean, you're looking at it from a standpoint of what if. Right now, Alabama needs to take care of business at home against a top-5 opponent in Tennessee to put themselves in the driver's seat for the SEC. championship. And personally, I think Alabama stands a good chance. Tennessee looked dang good tonight again, or last night against Auburn. Dalton Kincaid nearly scored 40 points. Tennessee, I didn't think, played well outside of Dalton Kincaid, but he put the team on his back and beat Auburn, who played a heck of a game as well. So it's not going to be easy, but I think Alabama ultimately gets it done. I might jinx them. I mean, that's how I am typically betting and everything. And anytime I pick someone, they end up ultimately losing. So, anyways, I think Alabama stands a good chance at home. They haven't lost an SEC home game in, what, nearly 2 years. So, until I see it, I'm going to keep predicting that Alabama's going to win that game. And if they do, they're going to end up being at least a share the SEC champion this year. So kind of looking forward, I want to take a few minutes looking at, you know, some of the NCAA tournament brackets. Now, Alabama's still firmly a 3 seed. They're probably the top, if not the second, ranked 3 seed in most brackets. This road win's definitely going to help. And if they beat Tennessee on Saturday, I could see them pushing towards the 2 line. Now, can they get to the 2 line? Absolutely. I see a path to where if they went out in the regular season, winning at Florida, home against Tennessee, home against Arkansas, I think they're on the 2 line at that point. Obviously, it depends on what some of these other teams do, like Kansas. But I think Alabama will push for that last spot on the 2 line. Do you want the 2 line? Absolutely. I mean, there's not much difference between a 2 or a 3. Obviously, playing a 15 seed is a lot better than playing a 14 historically. But, you know, you get a better location if you're the higher seed. I mean, there's several factors that really play into being a higher seed, albeit you're going to have to end up playing a 2 or a 3 seed in the second round anyway. So, or not in the second round, but in the Sweet 16 potentially. So, ultimately, in the end, a 2 and a 3 seed is not a big difference. But if you're wanting the best location and easier opponents heading into it, then absolutely. Absolutely. I'd much rather face a 7 to 10 seed than a 6-11 seed. So, ultimately, Alabama right now is a 3 seed. They could potentially move into a 2. At worst, they'll fall to a 4. I don't see them getting past the 4 line. They get past the 4 line, that just means they lost all 3 games, even to Arkansas at home, which isn't going to happen. And then they lose their first game in the SEC tournament, and other teams behind them just go on a rampage and, you know, win a lot of games. So I don't see that happening. Alabama's going to stay at a 3 or a 4, potentially move as high as a 2. So for this season, it's just kind of enjoy the games, and whatever happens, happens. Because at this point, Alabama's playing with cash money, being as good as they are, where they are ranked, where they are seed-wise, where they are in the SEC standings. No one expected Alabama to be here. No Alabama fans. No national pundits. Nobody. So just enjoy the ride, and whatever happens at the end happens. This is a lot better than following Alabama on the bubble every single week and worrying about who's winning, who's losing. So this is exciting times for Alabama basketball. Nate Oates has got this program going to incredible heights, and it's only going to get better as the years go on as well. So that's all I got tonight. It was a big win by Alabama over Ole Miss, 103-88. Again, I appreciate everyone listening to another episode of the Double Dribble Podcast. Please like or subscribe to the podcast. It really helps me out. And, you know, leave a comment or leave a review on the podcast on whatever platform you listen on. Again, I'm your host, Jordan Harper, head basketball analyst of Tide Illustrated of the Rivals Network. You can find me on Twitter at HarperNation24 if you want all Alabama basketball content. Or you can join Tide Illustrated and get a subscription. Hop onto the board and see all the information that I post premium on there as well. Again, I appreciate everyone listening to another episode of the Double Dribble Podcast. Until next time. Adios.